So this man was having was sitting at the breakfast table. He was having breakfast, minding his own business, reading the newspaper. And his wife said, "Do you know what day it is?" Being a typical guy, he wasn't about to admit he hadn't a clue. So he finished eating his breakfast and he rushed to work. 9 a.m., he sent flowers, a dozen roses to his wife. 1 o'clock, he had a teddy bear and a box of chocolates shipped over. 4 o'clock, he sent a singing telegram that expressed his deep love for his wife. When he got home from work, his wife met him at the door, kissed him, gave him a big hug, and said, "This has to be the best Groundhog's Day ever." So, you know, people make us smile, people make us cry, people make us laugh, people make us want to pull our hair out. Really, I don't think it's a stretch to say the quality of our life, the quality of our life is kind of related to the quality of our relationships. You know, I spend, as I sit with people at the end of their life, rarely do I hear people talking about their cars, their jobs, their bank accounts, their house, their vacation. Do you know what they're talking about? Who loves them? And who they love. We are told in the Trinitarian way that the very nature of God is relational. We're created to be in relationship. The quality of our life is very much a part of the quality of our relationship. So as I was thinking about today's topic, restoring our relationships, I thought, well, why don't I invite the person who's made my life immensely better for the last 28 years. 28 years ago, I married up. And my wife, Lori, is a licensed clinical social worker, and she has been in private practice as a therapist, restoring people's relationships to themselves and to each other for the last well over 30 years. And so would you welcome my better half? Well, this is so my sermon could be shorter so we could have dinner. So I'm just kind of curious in your just incredible, vast experience. Sorry. This seems so formal.
I know.
So tell me, Lori, what do you see as the key to kind of restoring, moving towards a restoration of relationships and wholeness? And maybe another way to ask it is, what do you wish people noticed in the relationships that they don't tend to notice very often?
Okay, that's bigger than you asked me the first time, I think.
We've been married 28 years. It's all about surprise.
Right. Okay. One of the things when Stephen and I started talking about relationships and what was important, there's definitely more than one key, right? One of the things that we sort of talked about, and a thing that I've become really aware of, is that probably one of the most important things in relationships, whether that's marriage relationships, friendships, relationships with our kids, with our parents, is that we acknowledge that change is the only constant, right? So it's sort of, in those relationships, if one person isn't willing to accept the change, they kind of get stuck, and they want things to be like it used to be. So a couple things that I was thinking about relationships is that if you're married and you're madly in love and you add one or two children, what happens? Changes, right? It's sort of, I was also thinking that we have to be able to recognize that things are changing and ask the other person what they're needing, recognizing that what they needed a while ago may not be what they need anymore. It's sort of like if you can imagine you have an infant and you're very aware of what they need, and you take care of those needs, what happens if you try and take care of them the same way when they're 16? Probably would meet with resistance, right? I think in terms of friendships, if all of your friendships were the same as they were in high school, what would that look like when you were 70? Okay? So that's probably one of the things that helps us be aware of other people, is whether it's a partner, our children, our parents, is to be able to be present and ask what they're needing and listen to what they're needing.
So how do I need to change? No, I'm just
kidding.
Well,
I'll tell you later. I'll tell you later. You haven't asked.
Fair enough.
That was a really good opening. I'm pleased.
If there is a particular skill as we kind of explore the way things change and how we need to adapt, you asked about, you know, questions in terms of what do we need. Is there any other skill that would be helpful to kind of just pay attention to those changes? We also didn't talk about
this. We didn't talk about this either. To me, it's being in the present. If we're really hoping that things are going to be like it used to be, or focused on what we're going to do to get it to be how we want it to be in the future, we're not very present and standing next to that person today. The other thing is recognizing that what I need today may not be what I need tomorrow or later this afternoon. So that dialogue, that being open to listen, to ask, that is relational.
So can you imagine putting up with this for 28 years? This is the embodiment of grace right here. Would you thank Lori, please?
Thanks. Thank you.
It's like hot in here. Well, the room temperature is set for February 4th. It's not February 4th out there. So Lori talked about one of the keys to restoring relationships is the capacity to adapt and change. You know, the one thing I notice, the one thing I wish, I can have one thing here. The one thing I wish people would know that they don't seem to know is this. Particularly from a faith perspective, our job, you might say our calling even, our calling is not to stop, evaluate, and judge whether or not someone is worthy or deserving of our love. Our job actually isn't even to stop, evaluate, and judge how someone should be loved. Because, of course, I know what's best for you, right? If people would just do what I think is best, the whole world would be better. Do you know what our job is? Love. That's our job. You know, we tend to love, we tend to love in a few ways. We tend to love in ways that are comfortable to us because we don't like to get out of our comfort zones, even though if we love in the way that Jesus loves, it's very uncomfortable. But we like to be comfortable, so we tend to love in ways that we're comfortable loving. The other thing is, I notice we tend to love in ways that we expect something back. You know, I'll give and I expect this in return. The third thing is, we tend to love others in ways that we think they should be loved, whether or not that fits them or not. Do you notice where the frame of reference in all those ways are? Me. So as I'm loving in all of those ways, where's the focus? Me. I. Our scripture that Stephanie read, the word love there in the Greek is agape, and one way to understand that is God-shaped love, and it says God-shaped love looks like this. Love is never selfish. Love does not insist on its own way. That's the game changer, in my view. That, in my view, changes everything. Notice the huge difference between, here's what I think you need, Lorraine, and I'm happily willing to provide it, versus, what do you need? There's the four words, by the way, that changes everything. There is the four words that will change every relationship in your life. What do you need? How can I best love you right now? What does love look like if I loved you in the way you need to be loved right now? You ever heard of Gary Chapman wrote this book, wild bestseller called Love Languages. Crazy, crazy bestseller. And in this, it's kind of interesting. It's taken a very complex thing and it's really simplifying it. So with that proviso. But it's this idea that we're all created uniquely and different. And so in other words, how I'm wired is different than how Robin's wired, how Jack is wired. So the way that I hear, that I experience love, the way that I hear that I'm affirmed and valued and worthy is different than you. The way I hear it, by the way, is affirmation. I gotta hear it. Sit down over a cup of coffee sometimes. I will tell you my whole life story, but that's me. I used to think I was neurotic, and I am neurotic, and that's just the way it is. I gotta hear it. It's really important for me to hear affirmation, hear the sense that I'm valued and worthwhile. Lori, my experience is, took me a while, but it's not that important to her. I mean, it's important, obviously, important to all of us, but it's actually not that significant to her. For her, I learned the hard way, is service. Take, for example, we both work probably more than full time, so our lives are busy and chaotic. So for Lori, making the bed in the morning, huge, huge. The only part of the day that actually starts with any order. And for me, could care less. In fact, I prefer the unmade bed because I'm one of those guys who sleeps with one leg out, so to have to kick sheets out is really a pain in the butt for me. So I actually would prefer an unmade bed. But for her, it's huge. So here's the deal, that I can get so preoccupied in my challenges. So I might have said to her 10 times in the morning, you know, I care about you, you're so important, I love you, I value you, I affirm you, call her during the day, thinking about you, I love you, I value, but I'm so preoccupied with my own challenges, I don't see the dishes that need to be put away, I don't see the garbage that needs to be taken out, I don't see the number for the contractor that needs to be called, I don't see the thing that needs to be picked up off the floor, I don't see the bed that needs to be made. So I have said, I told you grace, I've said I love you, but she may not experience that because I haven't communicated in a way that she hears it. So if I make the bed, because it's really unimportant to me, and she knows that. So that's sacrifice. And that's the love modeled to us in Jesus. Sacrifice. It's not about me. It's about what I can do for the other. That is saying I love you 1,000 times. Love does not insist on its own way. I mean, that takes a lot of vulnerability. It takes being willing to get outside of ourselves and try to enter into another person's experience. And that's risky. And really hear, without judgment, without assumption, what do you need? I worked when I lived in Australia, I worked in a ministry that provided houses for the indigenous folks, the Aborigines, in the remote outbacks of Australia. And this was tiny homes before tiny homes were tiny homes. So we provided these really beautiful tiny homes for the indigenous folks who had absolutely nothing. I mean, nothing. And we were so proud of ourselves, doing good, pat ourselves on the back, aren't we awesome? Giving up our time, giving up our resources to build these fantastic houses. So we'd go back to the remote places in the outback, and we just see in these houses that all the wood from the floor has been pulled up. and the wood around the door has been taken off. The doors have been taken off, and they've been piled in a huge bonfire outside. Like, what? At first it was like, how ungrateful! See, the indigenous folks, their sense of community is around the fire. The fire is everything to them. Around the fire, there is a place for everyone around the fire. They share stories around the fire. They eat meals together around the fire. In fact, houses for them is a sense of isolation from community. Did any of us have the vulnerability to ask, what do you need? What would love look like for you? Love doesn't insist on its own way. I think of the current debate on DACA and the Dreamers. How would that debate change if we reflected on what does a God-shaped love look like? A love that doesn't insist on its own way. So the lawmakers who are trying to determine the fate of these neighbors of ours, these lawmakers who most of them profess faith in Jesus Christ and claim to be, or not claim, are followers of Jesus Christ. I'm curious how many of them, I don't know, perhaps they have, but I'm curious how many of them have actually sat down with these dreamers. Tell me your story. Tell me, what would love look like for you? How can I love you in such a way that it would affirm your dignity as a child of God? How could I love you in such a way that you might have the opportunity to flourish? You know, the greatest commandment is love God, love neighbor, love self. And that's the nature of relationship. It's all inseparable. They're intertwined. The way we love God is by loving our neighbor. As we love our neighbor, we love God. You cannot love your neighbor by wanting less for them and their families, or accepting less for them and their families than you're willing to accept for you and your families. Certainly you can love, but that's not God-shaped love. And we can't claim that that is God-shaped love. And that's the tension, and that's the rub. Love does not insist on its own way. You know, I think the one skill, if I had one skill, if I could wave my magic wand, and I could just have one skill that just everybody learns, it's listening. Because we're bad at it. Most of us listen to reply instead of listening to truly understand. Most of us listen and we wait till the other person takes a breath and then we say, well, yeah, but, which means forget everything to the left of the but because now I'm going to tell you the truth. I actually think the best way to embody God-shaped love, genuine, generous, unconditional, self-giving, selfless, God-shaped love, is listening. I think the hardest spiritual work in the world is to be present with another, not to judge, not to fix, not to evaluate, not to save, not to solve, not to convince, not to control, but to listen. What do you need? That's grace. That's grace. Quite some time ago, a gentleman came to me and said, I don't understand my wife. I just don't know what to do. I don't understand. I have no clue where she's coming from. I don't get it. I said, quit trying. Change your focus. Make it your mission in life, whether you understand or not, to make sure that she feels understood. Make it your mission in life that she feels seen, heard, affirmed, valued, loved. See, those are two completely different roads. If I'm trying to understand, guess what I'm doing? As Morgan's talking to me, if I'm trying to understand Morgan, I'm thinking to myself, does that make sense? Is that right? Do I agree with this? How do I solve this problem? How do I fix this? Who am I thinking about? Me. That's my frame of reference. Notice if I said, I care about you. I want to do the best I can to try to see things through your perspective. So tell me more. This is what I hear you saying. This is what I hear you saying that's important to you. Is that right? Am I close? See, I may not agree. Funny thing can happen, though. Often we can agree to disagree when grace is present. Love is never selfish. Love does not insist on its own way. The self-giving, selfless, extravagant, generous, unconditional love of God that we are called to give away does not need a reason. Just a place. Every moment of every day, every person we encounter is such a place. We come to this table. That's what this table is all about. It's grace. We come to this table to be reminded of, to remember and be reminded of the God-shaped love revealed to us in Jesus. We dare to lean into the mystery that if we taste these gifts and participate in this ritual, that somehow the presence of that God-shaped love becomes part of us, that we might be the presence of that love in the world. And that, my friends, would be a game changer for you, and I'm audacious enough to think that maybe even for the whole world. We continue to worship God as the offering is received.